Yeah, I've spoken to the players and we've had a full and frank discussion, and we all agree that the smaller fish guys are not just a credit to clubs and their counties, but to Homo sapiens all over the world.
Well, I want nothing to do with that podcast. Absolutely not. The smaller fish, not for me, no way.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Welcome along to the Smaller Fish Football Show. We're in association with Benetti Menswear. Go to benetti.ie to see featured stock lists. So we have a provincial final preview show. And who better to do the provincial final preview show with two of the most decorated club footballers in the entire country? Aaron Kernan, 16 county titles, 8 Ulsters and 3 All-Irelands. Ger Brennan, 5 county titles, 4 Leinsters and 2 All-Irelands. It's an absolutely sickening hall of club honours. I'll start with you, Aaron. Do you know the way, like when I say, who better to start the show with than two of the best club players in Ireland? People will be going, they're not club players, they're county players.
Well, I wouldn't agree with that. Obviously, we were fortunate enough and privileged enough to play county football for a period of time. But for me, representing Cross McGlen, and I suppose the what I've seen going before me, I would definitely have to say that it was one of the driving forces, or it was a huge inspiration to me and give me something to really aim for in a small town or a small club that never had nationwide success. So yeah, to be able to go on and achieve what we did while playing for Cross McGlen has been, it's been amazing. But yeah, you have to start with your club first before you reach county level.
Do you ever feel that though, Gerard, that you're not seen as a club player when you play county?
I know. Yeah, I know what you're what you're trying to get at there. It's the people in the club who just know you as Aaron or Woolly or Ger, and they just know you, and they know your family, and they know your movements and everything else about you. Whereas the guy, a supporter who is not necessarily linked to your home club, they just recognise you from playing games with your county. So it's probably understandable why non-club members would kind of see it in that light. Sometimes that can bring its own kind of pressures on an inter-county player, because they're nearly perceived as Premier League footballers in some ways, like, you know. But it's a very different landscape for the elite amateur, you know.
Amazingly, Aaron, 16 county titles, 8 Ulsters and 3 All-Irelands. Ger Brennan has a better percentage record than you. He's 5 county titles, 4 Leinsters and 2 All-Irelands. His percentages are better, but his haul is worse, Aaron.
Yeah, I think Ger would be happy enough to swap with me.
not bad, Aaron, yeah.
No, in fairness, I suppose we're all three of us, again, you're very fortunate, and then history and tradition and what's gone before you is it's huge, and it's very much a motivating factor. And I'm sure Ger was the same, you're the same growing up in Portlaoise. So that's something that, you know, I really appreciate, that you had your trendsetters, you had the men that gone there before you. And I say it was very close to me. Like I was under 12 whenever we had won the first county title in 1996. And we hadn't won one for 10 years previous to that. So to think that I've now gone on and won 16 championships myself, whenever that first one, I literally, we had won an under 12 championship on a Saturday, and the boys won the county the following day on a Sunday. So it was very fresh to me. We had never won an Ulster. We'd never won an All-Ireland. So from not winning a county in 10 years to winning a county, Ulster and All-Ireland, whenever we had never done that before, you know, it just took football, it took the club to a whole new level. So for us as young boys coming up in that town, where I don't think we really realised at the time how lucky we were, and how much of an advantage, you know, it broadened our belief in ourselves, or give us something to aim for that the club had never had before.
Yeah, exactly. So your two, obviously, your careers, club careers crossed over. 2008 All-Ireland semi-final, Vincent's beat Cross McGlen. Was all over at half-time, really, Ger. I think there was a strong wind in it. Was it in Navan? Those games are usually in Navan. 2-8 to 4 points at half-time. Pat Gilroy was playing full forward, as we know, that year, because we played G that year as well. Ger, Tony McEntee marking him at full-back. Francie Bellew was injured, I think.
It was in Park Tolchin in Avon, Woolley, you're right, and we just came out of the blocks, a couple of crossfield balls into Pat with Mossy Quinn and Brian Maloney from Mayo, two corner forwards, just working off Pat, and everything that we tried in that first half just worked for us. And I'd say we nearly caught the last cold. The second half was closer affair, but I have great memories of that game. I was on Sean
McIntyre.
Yeah, so that was a great experience for me, having watched him play for Armagh and getting up for that game. But I think we just caught you a bit cold, Aaron. And I know we mentioned it probably before. I think it was all fair last year, Willie, but we got annihilated by Cross in St. Vincent's about a year previous. In the challenge game, I'd say the betters by 20-25 points with a lot of the same personnel playing. We managed to bridge the gap considerably in that time, and we managed to get over the line.
Yeah, we talked about this before, Aaron. You had a bit of a kick up the arse off a young, up-and-coming inter-county player called Dermot Connolly.
Yeah, you did. For those who are just listening in, your notes said I was marking Dermot Connolly, and I absolutely wasn't marking him. I was getting roasted by Dermot Connolly. like, you're talking about the goals that went in there. Both of them were the same, coming from the terrace side and Park Talton, diagonal, Pat winning them, laying them off. But really the catalyst was Connolly turning me inside out and kicking points off his right and left foot. And that was all within the first 10, 15 minutes. To be fair, we had our homework done on them. We were prepared. We were reigning All-Ireland champions. We had been very good in the Ulster campaign, played really well in the Ulster final against St. Gall's. Did we manage the Christmas break as well as we possibly could have? I don't think we did. But having said that, we wouldn't be using that as an excuse. On the day, you know, we had who we had out. We felt we were well prepared. We felt we knew what had to be done. But St. Vincent's, like you said, they put us to bed fairly early, and they were able to keep us at arm's length for the second half, even though we did get much closer from half time on. Really, there was only going to be one winner, and that was them.
The 12-week break is an interesting one because it's gone now. Thanks be to God. Like, I mean, I kind of have nightmares of the 12-week break myself because I headed off to Southeast Asia for seven of them. That was a stupid mistake and a stupid thing I did. But at the same time, Aaron, when you say you didn't handle the 12-week, it was a desperate thing to have to happen. Like, I mean, I remember our point of view when we won it. We beat Kilmacud Crokes, you know, well with a great performance, beat Road well, or beat Screen well in the final, Trevor Giles playing. And we were flying it. We hammered Road in the quarterfinal. I think if we had played the next 2 weeks, we would have won the All-Ireland. You know, it's very frustrating when you look back on it. It is gone now, Aaron. And like, how did you mismanage it, or what do you mean by that?
It probably wasn't. We trade nearly every year. It was a tweak. Like, what did we do right? What did we do wrong? So you have to remember, at that stage, we had won the All-Ireland the year previous. So your years are just overlapping. So at that stage, then the management had tried to give us a bit of downtime after Ulster. But like I mentioned, the Ulster final against St. Gall's and Newry that year, we were absolutely flaying, playing unbelievable stuff. Managers give us a bit of downtime. We then had to go to Ruislip in early January then to play, I think it was Tyrconnell Gaels at that stage, in the All-Ireland quarter final. And that was before we ended up playing St. Vincent's, but we were stale in Ruislip. Well, to be fair, every time we went over there, we always got a fill of it. You never win by too much. The pitch was always heavy. Refs didn't like to blow the whistle too often. So there were physical, dour sort of games, but we were so far off where we were in St. Gall's. We just similar to what you're explaining yourself, we lost all momentum. It's very hard. There's so much riding on it. It's very hard to know what's the right thing to do or what's the wrong thing to do. And we did try to change and tweak things. But I just think playing momentum, we completely lost the sort of flow that we were in. It's hard to get it up. And then throw in the fact we're all Ireland champions, there's probably a bit of overconfidence or complacency comes into it. And then factor in, it was a year previous in preparation for the All-Ireland semi-final. That's how we ended up playing St Vincent's. Their season was just starting in Dublin, but we were looking preparation for an All-Ireland semi-final. So we went down and annihilated them.
Right.
But that was obviously huge motivation for St Vincent's. Like we were a sitting duck for them as far as they were concerned. Like they were the ones with all the motivation. We were the ones, yes, we're All-Ireland champions and you have to be confident then. But were we overconfident? Were we a bit complacent? I would have to say, looking back now, yeah, we probably were. And we got what we deserved out of it.
Right, okay. And no final on St. Patrick's Day anymore, Gerard. Are you sad about that? Like, you've got some great memories of that.
No, I think it's thank God they eventually changed it and they've shortened the gap. Yeah, I'm all for traditions and holding on to those traditions which add value, but sitting around for 12 weeks to wait for a competition to be played out doesn't make sense, but it's the right thing to do for the players, and getting games played in Croke Park. Croke Park surface is a wonderful surface all year round, and I know the load has to be managed, but they've experts in there, so you know, getting as many of these club ladder stage rounds played in the likes of Croke Park and Turles and decent county grounds, why can't you get it played before the Christmas, you know? So
yeah, no, it's definitely get it over and done. And I think this year will all be done before the Christmas. It's just last year had been pushed on a little bit with our split season. This year, everything will be done before Christmas. I think it's fantastic. Imagine the Christmas you can have, Aaron, with the All-Ireland done before Christmas instead of having it done in the week that you're meant to be called back into a county panel.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that obviously it has knocked on this year, and I don't think people have really grasped that this isn't the format that is coming down the tracks. The All-Ireland final, whenever say the some of those provincial semi-finals were played, that's penciled in this year where your All-Ireland club final is going to be, and you have to remember then that's junior, intermediate, senior at both football and hurling. We're talking six All-Irelands going to be handed out before Christmas. The media, the marketing and the hype that has to come with them, those games will all be on television. I think from this year onwards, you're going to really see your club players and your club competitions going to a new level. It'll grow year after year. And I think it's going to be a brilliant spectacle. And I think the biggest thing is it gives players a calendar to focus on. It gives you something that is certain. Your county players know what they're walking around. But most importantly, 97 or 8% of the population are club players, you know, and it gives them, their families and that, there something to work around and still not take away from their preparation or their focus on football. So for me, I think we're definitely heading in the right direction.
I completely agree. The next 5 years, I'd love somebody from the GAA who listens to this show. The next 5 years, we will have our intercounty season till the end of July, but November and December will be huge months in the calendar as well. I think it'll be absolutely fantastic when the GAA cop on, market it properly. If RTE don't want to make a big deal out of those provincial clubs, sell them to Virgin. And, you know, let's do a big, big kind of package around these provincial competitions, the All-Ireland semi-final, the All-Ireland final just before Christmas, Ger. Like, come on. Like, I mean, if you can't make a big thing out of that, when there's no inter-county on, there's no distractions, there's nothing like St. Patrick's Day when you've around a national bloody league on the same day.
No, it's a no-brainer, and given that there is no winter county football on, the club finals will just attract far more people than they might normally would on St. Patrick's Day, and like you say, it is a huge opportunity to push this, market it, and got a good bit more branding around it, and in fairness to, I suppose, AIB, they've been involved a long time now with the club championships, and they put out some great ads and promotions around it. So if we can just build on that and it'll just grow. Fellas growing up then, you know, young lads who are in their teenage years now, you know, by the time they get to senior and young lads under 8 and 9s, by the time they get to, again, senior two, they won't know any difference. And the club finals being played in December will and hopefully should be a huge event for the country, you know.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And then young fellas watching on television, you know, inter-county might not be attainable, but I can start playing football on television if our club goes well. You know what I mean? So it's more attainable. Yeah, in Croke Park.
Yeah.
It's more attainable for young people watching rather than, you know, Jesus, I have to make the inter-county team to be able to get to that stage. The two provincial finals on this weekend, lads. The first one we'll look at is Austin Stacks versus St Finbarrs. On paper, two huge clubs haven't been going so well at provincial level, you know, in a good few years, really, in 20 years, both of them, but they have a rich history and that counts for a lot. I suppose, Aaron, like the big kind of controversy coming into this one is that Finbarr's refused the toss for home advantage. So like, I mean, you know, there was a lot of pressure. I was watching even Kieran Donaghy and stuff on Twitter saying, you know, why can't they do this? What's the problem? And then the St. Finbarr's manager, Paul O'Keefe, explained it. And he said, we've a small fan base, maybe 1,000 to 1,500. They'll go to Thurles to see us as fast as they go to Páirc Uaireann. So it wasn't any huge advantage for us having home venue. I could see why they wanted to toss. But from our point of view, why give them more advantages than they already have? You know, it's a 50-50. They're obviously not gambling men, Aaron. You know, like the red or black in the casino. But at the same time, like, I can see where they're coming from. If they lost that toss to have it in Austin Stacks Park with the Austin Stacks fans marching down through the town and everything, it's probably not something he was willing to risk losing.
It's not, and I don't know, maybe, like I said, I go back, they were thwarted enough that, you know, we were quite successful whenever we were playing. But my thinking on that is it's 1-0 for Stacks at this stage, because the whole thing is where you're talking about control the controllables, you know, and our focus is on the game and our focus is on how we play. No one, like, whenever you go out onto a field, like Tralee is a super pitch, super surface. You know, for me, I wouldn't care. So go in and beat them in their own backyard and then not be marching back out the gate after it. You know, that's the way I would look at it. Like, we've tossed for Ulster finals up here. Luckily, we won two of them where we ended up. We played Byrne and we played Kilcoo in Armagh both years. But a few years later then, you know, we went in and played Kilcoo in Newry, you know. And for us, it was as handy to go to Newry as it was to go to Armagh. Good pitch. Always is a super atmosphere. But, you know, that's what made it a wee bit more for us going in there to their backyard to try and take their scalp. So I don't know whether, you know, it shows a wee bit of lack of self-belief that that's something that they're worrying about. For me, I would, at this stage of the year, you're going to be playing it in a quality pitch. And it wouldn't really matter to me where I was playing it. Even more so if you're able to go into their backyard, get one over them. It just makes it that bit sweeter.
Right. What do you think, Ger? Like, I mean, I suppose I'm seeing it from the manager's point of view, and Aaron has kind of changed my mind. How would you be looking at it? Like, you know, I suppose Aaron does make a point. It's an intercounty pitch. It's not like going to play, you know, Dublin in Croke Park where it'll have 70-80% of the fan. Like, it's a club game. There's only probably be maybe 2,000 versus 1,000, and your own club fans make as much, you know, they'll all make as much noise, I suppose.
I would be of the same mindset of Aaron. As a player, you're looking for anything to give you that extra bit of motivation. And again, different things motivate different people. But that idea of going into, I guess, the enemy's territory and putting it up to them, that just added a couple of percentages to my performance or preparation anyhow over the years, and that's something I always loved and enjoyed heading elsewhere to play these games. With a manager's hat on, you can see where Paul O'Keefe is coming from too. That, I guess, is the politics maybe going on in the background between Munster Council officials and club officials. You wouldn't know some of the ins and the outs of it, and there could be one man, people trying to get one up on each other. But ultimately, I would probably be a bit like Aaron. I'd be happy to go and play whatever, and away venue was good, and the session on the way back then on the bus with the lads is always too good.
Yeah, that's because you two boys usually bloody won them, so you know. Yeah. So, like, I mean, amazingly, I was saying that these are two massively prestigious clubs. The last time Stacks were out in Munster, they were beaten by 16 points by Nemo Rangers, and the last time Finbarr's were out in Munster, Dr. Crokes scored 520 against them. Like, I mean, amazing. Both of them have to atone for humiliating performances in Munster their last time out. I don't think this will be a hammering, Aaron. Like, I mean, I haven't seen much of Finbarr's. I've seen Austin Stacks on television twice. Austin Stacks aren't the Dr. Crokes that are going to put 520 up against you. It's going to be a cagey game by virtue of the way Austin Stacks approach the game. They're an unusual Kerry team.
They are, yeah. They probably go against an awful lot of what Kerry would sort of base as the fundamentals of how they play football and express themselves. You know, they definitely, they keep the scoreboard down defensively, and like you said, they're never going to kill you, you know, with scores on the opposite end of the field. But for that reason, I would still have them favourites, because like yourself, obviously I've only seen some small snippets of the Barge on TV, but just in general terms, Cork teams tend to be running teams, tend to play the ball through the hand quite a bit, and that suits your defensive teams, because you know, you're always going to run into traffic. You're always going to have enough numbers behind the ball if your build up slow, that they're going to be facing up against you. You know, you're going to have to run through packed defenses. And like Stacks, I know this is the first time they've won the county championship in a number of years, but they've been winning the club championship in Kerry. They've just done three in a row. So they very are much a team that know what they're about. They're very well set up. They're in tune with how they want to play, and it doesn't seem to put them off in any way. So I think just because of how they play and general terms, how Cork teams like to play and play a running game, that it is very hard to break down a defensively set up team this time of year, because even if you do attempt to kick, the ball doesn't travel as far in cold weather, and wind and weather can have a bit of a bearing on it. So for me, that's why I'd have Stacks down as favourites.
Yeah, no, exactly. And to be fair to Stacks, they didn't win the county final the last time they were in Munster. They must have been beaten by East Kerry, I'd say it was. They were winning at that time. So they'd lost the county final and they were probably a little bit demoralised when they played Nemo Rangers.
Yeah, well, in 14, they actually ended up winning. They won the county and they went on to win Munster, and Slot Neil actually beat them
in Portlaoise. Yeah,
in Portlaoise, in that All-Ireland semi-final. I would say even... it was only 2014, but you're probably talking a huge turnover in players since then. But obviously, they have been building within Kerry. They've won the three club championships this past 3 years.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's a weird one, Ger. Austin Stacks had nobody on the Kerry panel this year. Now, they will have next year. Dylan Casey's been playing great. He's their captain and full back. And they'll probably have Joe O'Connor, who's very good in midfield, for them as well. But, like, I mean, you know... again, county champions. They play a defensive style. They're county champions in Kerry with absolutely no county men on the panel. Again, very unusual.
No, it is. It is very unusual. I suppose my experience of this in the Dublin setting was the likes of Thomas Davis is used to be flying it in the league.
Yeah, yeah.
They mightn't have anyone on the county panel, and just come championship, Davis's would tend to catch some of the bigger teams cold. But they'd eventually wouldn't be able in terms of the quality, they just fall short. But yeah, so it is I guess unique that there was no one on the panel last year. But I think Kieran Donaghy, with his experience there and leadership and some of the up and coming guys you mentioned, you know, there's obviously quality there within the squad, and the bit of dominance they've had and the exposure to the Munster Championship over the last couple of years is something which, again, it just removes some of the anxiety and fear that might be there, or the sense of the unknown for a lot of these players when they're going into the provincial club scene. An idea for a show, Woolly, could be the structures of the Kerry club championships, the multiple championships that they have. It'd be interesting to try to figure that out. They seem to have four or five different championships on down there.
Yeah, I understand it. I think it's great. It gives every club player in the whole county a chance to play at the top level. Like, they play their club championship, which isn't as important. It's like the eight senior teams at club level, right? So there's, and then their county championship brings in all those area teams, which is intermediate and lower. I hope I get this right. So, like, every player in that county, it must be brilliant for a county manager as well. You know, all these junior and intermediate clubs banging on about the great players they have, and you never really know how good they are because they're playing at that level. They all play in the county championship later on in the year. So, like, I think every county should be adopting it. Like, obviously, time is a big issue of getting the bloody two things run off.
Yeah. No, I certainly would. Look at it. For me, Woolly, Austin Stacks now going into this game the weekend, I'd be certainly agreeing with Aaron. It's hard to see Finbar's being able to do one up on them. I think just Cork teams over the last couple of years, and there does be a bit of a correlation between the county dominance of one over the other, and Kerry just traditionally have had the lead in that, and I think we'd probably get a similar outcome in the game the weekend.
Yeah, Stephen Sherlock is back to a bit of form for St Finbar's, but he'll be marked by Dylan Casey, who has marked Sean O'Shea and David Clifford so far in the championship. He's one to watch out for, even with Kerry this year, because I think there is probably a gap at fullback for Kerry. The other one, Aaron, I'll start with you. Derry Gonnelly versus Kilcoo. These have played each other before, of course, at the semi-final 2 years ago, and there was only 2 points in it in the end, 1-8 to 9 points. Very, very close game. I think Conor Laverty scored a very cheeky goal. He took a very quick free kick in that game, and the difference was the goal between the two of them in the end. So, like, I mean, there's probably been nothing between these again. And again, Aaron, we're looking at a cagey game in the Munster final. We're probably looking at another cagey game here.
We are. Just in the lead up show, I was doing a wee bit of research just to make sure I was correct in it. Like, you're looking at since 2009, where this Kilcoo sort of crop had made their breakthrough. They've won 10 county titles since then. In 2009, Derry Gonnelly had won the championship since then. They've won 7. So both teams, you know, are well, they've massive experience whenever it comes to Ulster campaigns. But I get the feeling that obviously, Derry Gonnelly haven't won a provincial title, and from Kilcoo's 10, they've won one. Obviously, they couldn't play in it last year. They've another opportunity this year. But I think there's maybe still just a wee bit of caginess in them and how they play, how they approach teams. Where, for me, I think they're still trying to hang into games and be sort of competitive and make sure they're there for the business end to try and close it out. Where I think if you've won that much and you've played that often at provincial level, I think at some stage you just need to say, we're just going to go out and have a cut continuously. Thrust yourself, back yourself. They have athleticism. They have good ball carriers. They have a couple of boys up front, particularly the likes of Jerome Johnson, who's in a rich vein of form, is scoring goals. But for me, I think they're just still holding back a wee bit too much at times, where they're just not cutting loose and going for it. And ultimately, I think that's what really cost them the All-Ireland final a couple of years ago against Cara Finn, because Cara Finn were going for 3 in a row. That huge pressure on them. But I know myself, I mean, in that situation, you're on the road a long time. You know, those 3 years they're tough enough going. But I think Kilcoo were just a wee bit too cagey in that game and didn't ultimately really go for it. And I think that's something that they should be, and I'm sure they certainly are regretting it. And I would like to think that at this stage, they're just going to go out and have a cut at it and say, like, there's no more of, you know, feeling our way through things. If we really want to go to be All-Ireland champions, we need to play with the confidence and the authority of that, and I think this is it's a massive opportunity for them this weekend to get back to an All-Ireland semi-final.
I mean this thing of, you know, you know the getting, say, 12 bodies back behind the ball, maybe leaving 2 forwards up, and then you have your goalkeeper, there's your 15, Ger, like that worked for a good few years. The counter-attack football worked. But now teams are so smart at it now. Like, counter-attack football doesn't really work. When do you see a lovely sweeping move down the other end of the field resulting in a score? Not all that often. A lot of the time the team wins the ball back, they play 1 or 2 lateral passes, and the other team goes back to kind of, you know, set up a little bit. Like, I don't get it. If you're the favourite, which Kilcoo and Austin Stacks are, and you know by playing those tactics, you're going to find yourself in a dogfight, why would you want to do that? Like, this is feeding into the underdog's hands. Lovely. There's a good chance we'll be in it with 10 minutes to go now, lads, you know, because of the tactics the favourite's using. It's a bit of a head scratcher.
I fully agree with you. I absolutely fully agree with you. And I remember watching the Cara Finn Kilcoo game, and when they were chasing the game in normal time, Kilcoo, if you can remember, they just put a massive press on Cara Finn, got multiple turnovers. Referee blew the whistle, went to extra time, and in my head I was thinking, surely they'll go and play the same way, Kilcoo, because that was working for them. But no, they sat back and gave Cara Finn breathing space, and Cara Finn, just with their experience and guile, pushed them on. But when you are a favourite and you have dominance, I think if you step right up on the opposition, even in the first 5 or 10 minutes, if you do get caught and they get a goal on you, your quality and dominance should come through over the course of the 60 minutes, and they should be able to regain that back. But like, anyone can play senior Gaelic football if there's nobody marking you and you're passing the ball left and right and left and right, and you have a general level of fitness. You know, there's nothing particularly difficult or challenging about that. But Kilku, if they did go more offensive, like the quality of player that they have there, and you've mentioned some of the names as well, and we've been watching the last number of years playing with Down too, like they seriously just individually talented players who have an awful lot of football in them, and just let them go out and express themselves, and chances are they'll come out on top.
That was it. Now, obviously, Aaron, you couldn't, you know, I'm talking about the press they put on Carrafin when they were chasing it. You couldn't keep that intensity up for 35 minutes. But like, I mean, there has to be a middle ground kind of here where, you know, you are pressing high up.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and they've got smart men over them. Let's not forget that either. And Mickey Moore and Conlett Gilligan, Richard Thornton from Culleen and Throne. Their core group, their leaders have been there since 2009. Your Conor Laverty, Aidan Brannigan, granted he's only coming on now, but all these boys have been there for that prolonged period of time. But it's just, you go back to the Glen game, like where Glen, yes, they are a very, very good team, but that was their first ever championship. This Kilku team have just won 10. They're the reigning Ulster champions. And that game come down to a goalkeeping mistake, which Jerome Johnson punished. And for me, I just think, as someone you're so used to winning and success and know what it takes to get across the line, you can't leave it to that because you can get clipped, you know.
Yeah.
And same thing, like Derrygon, you know, like I said, they have 7 county titles. They've been knocking on the door in 3 Ulster semi-finals. This is them getting to the final. You know, yeah, you would have to say, early on against Clan Aaron, like they absolutely blew them out of water, got the 3 goals, put the game to bed. They were comfortable. Now, granted, Clan Aaron fought back really well and made a bit of game of it. You could say the sending off before half time for Derry Gonley, obviously, it would have hindered them. But the way they play football, in terms of your short passing and this experience, the massive experience level that they would have had over Clan Aaron, was enough for them to see it out. But they'll be comfortable in a battle. They'll be comfortable in a running game. You know, this is like, they'll be confident they can match Kilku in this. So it's, as Ulster champions, are Kilku going to come out and stamp their authority and say, we are the men who hold this title. We're not happy with Ulster anymore. We need to win this because we're going one step further. Derry Gonley haven't been there before. They're not thinking about All Ireland. They're just thinking about Ulster. But for me, it's optical coup to come out and show the country this weekend, and you know that they really mean business and they're setting their sights on something here.
Yeah, exactly. Their fullback Tiernan Daly was talking at the launch of the finals. He said, "I see a lot of similarities between the two teams. There's a lot of sets of brothers, which is always interesting when you come down to club level. There's 6 Joneses on the team, on the Derry Gonley team. I don't know if they're all brothers, Jared. They could be. Probably a cousin. Like, how do you beat that? You talk about band of brothers, team spirit. Like, you don't get any closer to having it full of brothers. Like, I mean, there's the Brannigans and the Johnsons with Kilku. Like, I mean, how many bonding weekends do you need to go away on to get anywhere near the team spirit all these brothers have?
I tell you, don't start any rows with any of the Joneses. You'll have a load of them running at you. It is great. And Tiernan Daly, he obviously mentions it. It is something that's fairly unique in the club scene and the parish format and boundaries of Gaelic games and the islands. And it is a wonderful and unique thing. So that spirit is just there through upbringing, through fellas going to primary school with one another. Again, trying to cultivate that in maybe larger towns can be challenging, or certainly in some of the clubs in Dublin. But with the more rural parishes, fellas just know each other inside out. And, you don't need too many weekends away for those group of players to get that bit of spirit going.
Yeah, I've always said it on the show. I always a little bit envious of those small club togetherness. All the supporters are feckin' losing their minds in the stands, and you're kind of, I'd be looking at this kind of in awe as Portlaoise barely muster a cheer as we get a score. Like a big town kind of, you know, you go up the town after winning a county final, and it's like you're annoying some people in the pub, Aaron. Like a completely different experience for you, I'm sure.
It is, and to be fair, that's something that would have annoyed me. Now, I suppose the past few years, if you're talking about the Dublin team and everyone talks about funding, population and all that there, from a club perspective, I found that was a massive advantage to us because, like, I would have thought there's no way your Vincent's or your Kilmacud's, like people say, oh, Kilmacud, we're coming up against them. They have five minor teams and they're churning out so many players where we might have five minors coming out of Cross the Glen, you know. But to me, that was a massive advantage to us. Now, obviously, I believe we had a good team, but they couldn't possibly be as close as we were as players or as a community just because their landscape's completely different. They're living in a different world if they're living in a city compared to what we have here in Cross the Glen. So I never seen it as a disadvantage for us. I always felt it was a massive advantage in that, you know, we knew everybody intimately as teammates, and in terms of the town, walking up and down the street, all everyone wants to talk to you about is football. They're running from fortnight to fortnight. Who are we playing? Where's the next game? Who's going well? Who's injured? And that's what makes it really, really special, the whole journey that teams and clubs go on. And you hear everybody saying it. It's just the excitement that it brings to smaller communities like our own. That's what makes everything worthwhile. And for me, it was always a huge motivating factor for me, in that you just seen what it meant to everyone outside even of your playing panel. It was the be all and end all. Your winters were shorter whenever you're going well in Ulster, and it was giving everybody hope and something to look forward to, and you can't underestimate that.
Yeah, exactly. Us townies will just never be able to relate to it, Aaron. That's the unfortunate thing. Alright, we'll leave it there. We'll come back with some Sigerson and inter-county news. Smaller Fish GEA is powered by Benetti Menswear, who supply a range of tailoring, groomswear, casual menswear, footwear and accessories. Okay, we'll get on to the Sigerson in a second, but there was just that one result I wanted to mention to you boys. It was Cavan hammering Tyrone. No big deal in that. It's just Dr. McKenna Cup game. Tyrone are only back from holidays. They're in Miami. I follow some of them on Instagram. So they're having an absolutely fantastic time altogether. Like, you know, sure, he started Hamsey, he started Peter Hart, he started McGeary, he started McCurry. He brought on Myler, he brought on Kilpatrick, he brought on Michael McKernan. And I think he's on the Jordanstown team. But he also had lads like Rory Brennan, you know, who would have been on the holiday, and other panel members, Lafferty, who would have been on the panel. Like, why is he putting them straight into a McKenna Cup game? Like, I mean, you know, like when Dublin do this to play their under-21 team, they don't get bogged down into it. Or is there a psychological thing going on here with Fergal Logan where, you know, geez, you've had a good time, you know, getting a kick up the arse now might not be the worst thing for them, bring them back down to earth. I'm trying to understand what he was doing here.
I'd say certainly the psychological kick in the arse is definitely something that Tyrone would probably be happy with, the management coming out the other side of that kind of defeat, albeit a pre-season tournament. But from a performance point of view, you just have to start working the crap out of your system and start the training and start playing at some point, because the nature of the league now and in the championship, you know, it's just a pre-season and then it's game, obviously a couple of weeks off here and there, but you know, there's no time for doing heavy work within the league itself, and certainly come to the championship. So you need to get as much work done in these pre-season tournaments as possible to ensure you're kind of hitting the ground relatively fresh and able and capable to take the load of what will be required in the National League. So yeah, it makes sense to me to put them in, give them a half each and gradually increase the load into, I'm not sure who they're playing on the weekend or following Wednesday, but it certainly makes sense. You have to start at some point. So
what's your take on it, Aaron?
Yeah, well, just looking from their team sheet, there would have been more than those guys. You have younger players who were named on them, who would have been on that holiday as well. And it's a difficult one. Like, I don't know, if you're judging by the social media, they potentially only come home on Monday, maybe Sunday, Monday, and then you're playing that their game of a Tuesday night over in Cavan. It's definitely welcome back to reality for them. And then the scoreboard, there wouldn't have been a whole pile of fighting to throw by. It wouldn't have took a whole pile for a game to run away and them to start feeling sorry for themselves. But in terms of Fergalogan, Brian Dewar, are they going to be annoyed? Absolutely not. It gives them a bit of a stick to beat the players with over the next few weeks. They play Armagh this weekend as well. But their full focus now over the next 3 weeks will be ramping things up a bit, seeing if they can get one or two new fresh faces in to kickstart the league campaign and see if they can make some more positive changes as they build towards summer. But definitely, absolutely no such thing as panic stations or worry within that group. But just maybe a reflection of where they're at and the work they need to do over the next few weeks. But I'm fairly sure with the men they have over them and some of the key players that they have, they'll not be too long taking that beating on board and realising that there's a bit of work to be done.
Yeah, they probably know there's a bit of work to do. I remember when we went away on a holiday after winning the Leinster 2003, we lost the first three league games. Then we won the next four and, you know, we're comfortable in Division 2. It takes a while, I don't know. Maybe I can only imagine what it's like for an All-Ireland coming out 2 days later in a feckin' competition, you know, more one to play in at that stage. You were down in Tralee yesterday, Ger. You came up, there wasn't much crack on the bus on the way back up from there, if we're talking about away matches. MTU Kerry, I have to look at this nonsense. So now it's Munster Technical University Kerry. Like, it used to be Kerry RTC, and then when I was there, it was IT Tralee, and now it's some abomination called MTU Kerry, and there's an MTU Cork as well. So we suppose we have to get used to this. They beat you 113 to 11 points. You were down there.
Yeah, it was a fabulous day. Weather was absolutely gorgeous. The ground staff had the pitch looking brilliant too, in fairness to them. And Eamon Fitzgerald down in IT Tralee, or sorry, MTU Kerry, as we're calling them. So the game itself, the better team won. We could have snuck it. We did have enough opportunities, but probably over the course of the 60-odd minutes, I keep saying IT Tralee, but the Tralee.
Oh, you can keep saying it.
I keep saying it. I know it's very difficult. Yeah. They just started particularly well. They caught us actually talking about counter attacks, but they were kicking it forward, 30, 40 meter kick passes, which is great to see. And their inside forward line just they kind of come out of the blocks fairly quickly. And Tony Brosnan was excellent. Young Tomás O'Shea from Gael talks was very good at 11, and they just caused us a bit of bother. We eventually got going the second half, got ourselves into the game, won a bit more dirty ball, but we've a bit of improvement now to do. We have a knockout game now. UCC would have lost against Munster Technological University Cork, IT, CIT. So they lost to CIT yesterday evening, so we're due to play UCC up in Billings Park in Belfield now next Wednesday in a knockout game. So But it's good. The Sigerson competitions, they're usually enjoyable because fellas, you know, there's less tactical constraints on them and they are playing with a bit more freedom. And every you know, decision they make on the ball or whatnot, it's not being scrutinised to within an inch of their life, which can kind of happen at the inter-county level, you know, so.
Yeah, exactly. So Tralee IT, we'll all call them Tralee IT. They've Mike Breen, they've Darren Minahan, Tony Brosnan, Jack Savage. Tony Brosnan scored 1-4, like you mentioned. Tony Brosnan in that game came off with a head injury and came back on in the second half. So it mustn't have been too bad. But amazingly, which I couldn't believe last night, is Jack Savage and Tony Brosnan got into the car after playing that match down in Tralee and drove 400 kilometres round trip to go play McGrath Cup for Kerry in an absolute demolition job of Tipperary. Now, they came on in the 58th minute the two of them. Immediately, I don't want to blame Jack Savage. I don't want to blame Tony Brosnan. They're trying to impress a new manager, and we've all been there. You'd pretty much do anything to let them know that you're, you know, really committed and you're in it and you don't mind hard work and you don't mind, you know, going driving here, there. My problem is, Aaron, surely with Jack O'Connor, that you're not bringing on two fellas to play the full feckin' Sigerson Cup game earlier on, in a match that meant bloody nothing.
Yeah, like, without knowing the ins and outs of it, it's hard.
What ins and outs do we need to know?
Yeah, but it's hard to know how they were let get into that car. Like, there is a certain stage, I completely get those boys, they haven't really made it under previous management in Kerry. They're mad keen to impress Jack O'Connor, but Jack O'Connor needs to save them boys from themselves in this instance. Like, there's a high probability that one of them was going to get injured last night. If I remember correctly, I think Tony Brosnan has pulled a hamstring this past few years playing for Dr. Croke. So he's had a few niggly injuries. You know, to play a full game, to jump in the car, to drive off to Tipperary, get back out and try to start all over again. And granted, he was only throwing on at the end, but that's where Jack O'Connor and all the experience he has picks up the phone and says, boys, we don't need you. We're playing Tipperary. We have 24 boys here. That's all I need. I'll see you playing on Thursday night and we'll have you in the squad for our next game, the final of it, whenever it is. But definitely managing some of Jack's experience, you save young boys who are eager from themselves, and don't put them in that situation, because number one, they're not needed, and number two, there's a high probability, if you're ever going to get injured, that that's the instance that it's going to happen.
Yeah. Jack O'Connor said after the game, Tony and Jack were tremendous. I didn't ask them to come up at all. They wanted to be involved. They volunteered themselves. That's great to see, because those lads are mad to get every minute they can in a Kerry jersey, which is great. Again, I don't blame them for volunteering themselves. There's no better kind of show of commitment than to get into the car and drive. And, you know, like, Jack is not explaining why he actually went and brought them on, Ger, which is the next step. That's on Jack. Driving up, volunteering themselves is all great. I would have, if when I saw them coming up like that, I would have, that would have been enough to make me know that they're two committed young fellas, and I would definitely make a note of it. I'd send the two of them in to get a rub, and I'd tell them to do a bit of stretching and come watch the match, and fair play to you for driving up. And wouldn't everybody be happy in that situation?
Of course they would. It was a bad decision from Jack O'Connor to ask those fellas to travel up with their boots to play. Certainly come up and show that you're interested, and like you say, jump on the physio's table and get a bit of a rub. But for those lads, after playing a senior championship match, a college championship match, which is fairly high intense in itself, and then to, again, do that 400k round trip, it's kind of brain dead, if you ask me. And I know, from being down there in Tralee yesterday, that those lads were asked by Kerry to travel up and
really
that game. Yeah, so that was that's the word on the ground in Tralee IT, from somebody who would be in the know. You know, there would have been many people involved with the Kerry management, I'm sure, probably in watching that game yesterday. You also have Aidan O'Mahony is managing the team for them, and he can give insight into how the lads performed as well. And putting that stupid load on college players to take that trip, it doesn't make any sense at all, you know. And we have to be looking after our players a bit better. So
yeah, no, I completely agree. Talking about looking after our players a little bit better, this isn't a great reflection on Whitehall Colm Kill. I don't think their club grounds, because we had Sean Mulcairns, he's the Galway fullback. It's going to be a big loss for Galway. 58 minutes on the clock. He went down with a very bad knee injury. The ambulance took more than a half an hour to arrive. And this chap was just left lying on the ground for 30 minutes, Aaron, in the cold. Now, you know, before an ambulance could come and put him into it, no stretcher, which is why I'm saying, you know, it doesn't look great for Whitehall Colm Kill, you know, to get him in off the bloody cold ground into the dressing room, no stretcher, lying on the ground. You know, I don't know, Jesus, how bad would the injury have been, Aaron, that they couldn't have carried the chap off the field? It must have been really, really bad. They abandoned the game because of it. And it was Galway, NUIG were awarded the game. They were 2 points up at the time. Jordanstown, you know, you'd have to give them a lot of credit for conceding the game, probably 5 minutes left in it, because of the seriousness of the injury.
Yeah, no matter what team you have out, whether it's club, college, county or whatever, there is medical personnel on board there. So you would have to think that the injury was unfortunately a serious one, that they didn't want to move Sean Mulcairn. It's just surprising this day and age, 2022, that you don't even have a stretcher at a club or a county ground in order to help a player off the field. But yeah, it just, I suppose, you know yourself whenever you get hurt, whether it's a serious one or not. So Sean would have been feeling bad as it was, but to have it compounded by having to stay there or lay in a cold field waiting on a bit of help, it wouldn't have helped the situation in any way. And we can only hope for someone who has been making a breakthrough to county football that hopefully it maybe isn't as bad as first feared, and he gets back out for his college and his county early in the year.
Well, what's your experience of Sigerson Cup games, Gerard? Are you usually, you know, run to a high standard with, you know, medical treatment and things like that?
Yeah, well, teams would obviously have physios at every game at this stage, and to be a decent medical support. You might not always maybe have a doctor at some of the preliminary games, and these injuries unfortunately happen given the nature of the sport, and it's just unfortunate that they occurred. And I guess to be sitting there in the cold, again, it couldn't have been particularly comfortable, but I don't know the ins and outs of it, that I wasn't up there. I know, in fairness to Whitehall, they've been developing the whole time, and they're running a great club up there, and they actually relegated St Vincent to the Senior B Championship this year as well. So they're doing a lot of things right. So I don't know the ins and outs in terms of backup medical supplies or stretches or whatnot, you know.
Right, okay. I'd say with you, Ger, on this, because you well are favourites. I was looking at the betting on this to see who were up there. I was thinking it would be usually DCU, Jordanstown, the great underachievers in the Sigerson Cup, were usually 1 and 2. You well are favourites. And then I had to go looking. They've Owen McLaughlin and Sean Powter in their halfback line. They've young Paul Walsh from Kerry. They've David Clifford. They hammered Sligo 4-15 to 7 points. They've Stefan Ockenbar as well, who looks like a real talent. Where have you well come from? Have they been, you know, is this just a lucky group of players, or have they been making a push for the Sigerson?
It's like luck certainly comes into it in terms of what courses a college might be providing. Location also comes into it too. But the quality of player that UL have, I guess UCD would have had it a couple of years ago with Stephen Cohen, Jack McCaffrey, Paul Mannion, a couple of other guys like that. John
but I'm
Hedden.
Saying, yeah, but you, yeah. Like, I mean, you offer good scholar. You have a good scholarship program. Like, I never really heard of UL, you know, focusing on that, or have they, you know, increased that?
Yeah, I'm not sure whether they've increased it or otherwise. But look at UL, the main universities will be providing versions of similar support financially, depending on sport budgets. Some third level institutions might be able to help out students in their accommodation and everything else than others. But I suppose in the case of the likes of David Clifford and even Paul Walsh, if there's a course in UCC or IT Tralee, and the similar course is being provided in UL, and if one of those institutions are providing a bit more in the short term to help a student manage the financial cost of college, a guy who's 18, 19, 20 tends to be attracted to the extra few bob.
Yeah, and his parents probably attracted to it as well.
Well, there you have it. Yeah,
attracts everybody to it. It's free money. It's absolutely fantastic. Yeah. Come here, on another note here, Aaron, I'll start with you. Did you see this, lads? I saw this on Twitter on Monday. Desi Hutchinson, in my top three favourite hurlers in the country, dynamite is the word I'd use to describe him. Just has it all. There was a picture, Michael Verney from The Independent had this on Twitter, and he had the usual wristbands, and, you know, like, I mean, what he had written on him, you always see lads, they could have letters on them, they could have everything. And again, anyone that listens to the show, for my podcast for the last 5.5 years, knows my opinion on this. I'm too old fashioned. I'm too old to understand this. But this was one I'd never seen before. And Desi Hutchinson had written on his white wristband, score, score, score. He's a feckin' corner forward, Aaron.
I wouldn't be one for them at all now, to be honest with you. Score, and you're a corner forward, and your only job really is to score.
I'm starting to wonder now, have they been drilling work rate into forwards to the extent now, and turnovers and tackle, that you have to be reminded what you're actually there for?
Yeah, well, I don't know. Like, in one way, well, in fairness, the rich German form he's in at club level, there's hardly anyone can touch him in the country. He's going to score, but you come up against a good defender, a good man marker, and he sees score, and you're not scoring. He's the boy that's going to be letting you know about it. But for me, whatever works for you. But like I said, whenever you're an inside scoring forward who has one sort of thought process in mind, and that's get the ball and head straight for the black spot, I don't think you need to write anything in your hands because it's just second nature for you.
Yeah. What would you say to a man you're marking, Ger, with score written on his wrist?
I don't know. Like, Caroline Curd was in with us for a while, and lovely girl from Sligo, and lovely lady rather. And I was still sorting out a bit of discipline issues, you know. So she says in an old meeting, would you try put the old white tape on your wrist and you know, if you feel yourself getting wound up, just have a look at the white tape, and the white will kind of engage the logical side of your brain, and that should help defuse the situation a bit, you know?
Yeah.
So I says, grand. So I put it on for a couple of times, and sort of things be coming off with sweat after a while, and ultimately I was told if I kept getting put off, I won't be playing anymore. And that was the thing that that worked for me from a psychological point of view, you know?
I get that. So, yeah. Like, I mean, a fella that I worked with, Lee, explained to us, like, it's that chimp feckin' theory, isn't it? The things you write on your wrists are supposed to bring you back into the now and, you know, yeah, refocus and stuff. And, like, for you, who might have had a short fuse or whatever, like, did you with an open mind start looking at your wrist to bring yourself back? Like, I mean,
I can't say I did.
Didn't believe in it at all.
Jer, you could have taped your hands up like you were Macho Man Randy Savage, and it wasn't going to change the way you were taping.
See, Diff, I tell you what it is, Woody, right? You I guess as a manager and even from a teaching point of view or coaching now, you've 30 fellas in the classroom or 30 fellas in the dressing room. They all learn in different ways. There's common themes in how we learn, obviously. Experience is the best way to learn a skill. But some fellas like doing the extra stuff. They like doing the extra video work. Quick enough on the video stuff. I got it and moved on. But you see lads sitting down, fucking spending hours looking at stuff. And then other guys from the sports psychology point of view, some fellas felt that it helped them. Other fellas felt that, I felt it was a load of crap. I just felt that I didn't actually need it, but I could see how it would benefit another player. And if you have the resources in your kitty to pay for one of these sports psychologists to come in, it is going to add value. But it's not for everyone, you know, so.
Well, that's it, yeah. So, like, I mean, people are getting a very biased view from me on this show about what I think of it, because it's not for me. Yeah. But look, if I was on a team and it helped three, and the other 12 thought it was silly and didn't want to do it, isn't that a positive thing, I suppose, right? That three think it helps them.
Yeah, well, when you look at the finer margins of you know, the latter stages of intercounty football and obviously club hurling and football that's on now, you know, there's so little between teams, and even look at going back to Dublin, 5-6 in a row, like, you know, they only won by, I think, 3 points maybe was the most, and maybe did they beat Kerry or the better own in one of those finals. But other than that, there was only a point in it a lot of the time, you know, so they are fine margins, so.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. Two other stories here before we go is Leinster GAA have been talking about 15% drop-off in 2021 in referees. I don't know, Aaron, is this just an unusual year with, you know, so many restrictions and all that COVID stuff going on, and the season didn't start until April, May for anybody? You know, this, maybe it's not a good year to be panicking about this. You know, like, I mean, it was Martin White, who's the Referees Administration Committee chairman in Leinster GAA. He said, obviously, the continuing abuse targeted referees is a huge problem. We need county committees to take a stand against this abuse. This is in vogue at the moment. We lost 15% of our referees this year who either walked away. 44 referees were recruited to the province. That's less than four per county. How do you see this kind of thing? Like, I mean, I think it's after the Mount Bellew My Lock game against Pierce's, we were talking a lot about abuse and referees. Do you think it's a problem? Do you think it's affecting referees getting involved?
First of all, I think the COVID year would probably have a massive part to play in it, because I think we just seen in terms of restrictions, in terms of people trying to mind themselves, in terms of people having a different perspective in sport and life in general, I would have thought that that would have had an issue with it. For me, abuse, yes, obviously there is that high profile, the Connacht semi-final that I suppose everyone's talked plenty about it. There's no need for me to add to it at this stage. But I would have to say, from my own perception, in general, I think our games have come on a huge amount this past 10 years or so. Can you keep everybody in the ground quiet? Absolutely not. Whether it's juvenile or adult football, you're not going to control people and how they behave themselves. You're not going to control them down the street, and you're not going to control them, unfortunately, whenever they go into a sporting ground. But maybe it's wishful thinking for me or my perspective, but the odd time you would take a weird notion, you'd say, Jesus, you know what, you should need to go and get involved in refereeing yourself and try and see if you could do anything with it. But I would like, if a referee called you. The biggest players in this are your captains and your managers, because what they do and how they behave, your captain influences his teammates and your management basically influences everyone on the field and off the field, and how they're behaving in terms of reacting to referees and refereeing decisions. For me, they have a massive bearing. If you see your manager freaking out on the sideline or having a go all the time, I think that there rubs in on the players. It gives them an excuse then. The referee's on our back. And they'll run with it, and they'll get stuck into him as well. So if a referee was to call in his captains and his managers, do his coin toss for the game, have a chat with him, say, this is how I like the referee, this is what I'm a stickler for. If you have an issue, I expect the captain to speak to me on the field or management at halftime or after the game, and as much as possible, try and leave it that way, that we're showing a certain amount of respect to each other. I don't think it's happened, because I've never seen it happen at a club level. But for me, that's one way I think that we can try and help to eradicate the bits and pieces that does go on in the game, because it cuts out the us versus them. It's not going to be perfect by any means, like I say, because it's so hard to control adults whenever you put them in a competitive environment. But for me, I think it would be one small step in heading the right direction.
Do you think GAA referees need to be a bit stricter or a bit more assertive? Because most GAA referees, in my experience, let you away with it. You know, the old, oh, for fuck's sake, ref. You know, this kind of a thing. It kind of does general things. Whereas if you play soccer, like, I mean, you say any sort of a word like that, even generally, not even at the referee, you might go, oh, for fuck's sake. And he's bringing you over, standing you in front of him. And he's talking to you like you're a five-year-old child. It's a little bit embarrassing, and you just want to get away from him. And, you know, like, do GAA referees let us away with a little bit too much, kind of, you know, language-wise?
I've a lot of thoughts on this, and I think on a human level, you're dealing with an individual who's going to make errors. But for me, my biggest issue would be the speed and the quality of the game has improved over the last number of years. But for me, the standard of the number of high quality referees, club and intercounty, has not increased at all. And the quality of refereeing is just particularly poor in general. Look at the game yesterday, while the better team won against UCD, we had a Kerry referee refereeing, and the free count was 25 against UCD at halftime. It was 25-4 against UCD, and the free count finished at something 40-odd to maybe 14, and he was just a poor referee. He was out of his depth, and I've just seen that numerous times now. And these fellas, a bit like a junior footballer talking out for the senior football team, he gets shown up quick enough. We have a lot of junior standard referees refereeing senior games, and they're just not able for it. and given the amount of work that an elite inter-county footballer and hurler and an elite club player puts in to getting themselves right, to be, I think, dished up with substandard refereeing is hugely frustrating. So that's probably my big bugbear with him, is the standard refereeing is particularly poor. For my time as a player, some of the best referees were the guys who spoke to you and told you, here, cop on, you're wrong, get on with it. And they spoke to you in a nice tone, an authoritative tone, but they were very respectful of you. And players would respond to that then as well, and they would get on with it. But some of the decisions and the inconsistencies are just, seems to me to be getting worse. And I'm watching a lot of games, just club and county and colleges, more than yourselves. And yeah, I think the standard refereeing, generally speaking, has gone backwards.
Yeah, I don't like the way a referee can have a terrible game. Say to Mount Bellew, my luck one, I didn't see the whole game. I saw the last 5 minutes, which were a lot of mistakes in it. Then players get massively frustrated, and then there's a big thing about, oh God, the poor referees, you know, like, I mean, yeah. And they're complaining, Aaron, a little bit about online abuse and all, like, I mean, the heat you're taking online is from a terrible performance. And my theory on this is players get heat online for terrible performances. Terrible performances online is a bloody shark tank. It's a terrible place. And if you have a bad performance, my advice would be 2 or 3 days, let it all blow over. Like Aidan O'Shea said, he goes off the grid. And by the time you go back online, it's all after calming down. I have done it and it does work. And trust me, you'll be a lot better in your own head for it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not right, but whenever you're putting yourself up there in a public position, whether that is refereeing or playing, and you choose to go online in any walk of life now, you're going to get a bit of heat. And I suppose the biggest issue that you have there is the call that was made in the Mount Bellew Mylock game. It was just such an obvious call for the referee to make, and for whatever reason he made a mistake in it, but he has to, like, it's human, you have to hold your hands up and accept responsibility for that. And if that happened in a workplace and he made such a blunder, he's going to take heat for it as well there. So it's not nice, and it shouldn't happen online, but it does, and it happens across the board, whether it's sporting or otherwise. And I suppose it's just something that we've all become accustomed to and grown to nearly expect at this stage.
Yeah, no, we definitely have. Be interesting to see. It doesn't seem like it's a hugely attractive job these days for whatever reason. Maybe all that stuff is feeding into it. It's not an easy job either, I have to say. Like, I mean, I do respect the fact that it's a very, very difficult job. Some games you'd look at going, God help that poor referee. Bit last story here is Mark Keane. He's not going back to Collingwood. So he's been playing centre-back for his hurling club team. And people were wondering when he was going back to Australia. And as it looks now, he's not going to go back. So he's a big plus for the Cork footballers. I'm not sure how good a hurler he is. I think his hurling team is a junior hurling team or something. So I'm not sure too much about him for Kieran Kingston. But he's definitely a big plus for the Cork manager. The other bit of news is that Oisin Mullen's not in Australia yet. And now there's talk that he might not be going, Ger, which is a huge boost to Mayo. James Horan said after their match against Galway in that air dome, he said he was reluctant. He said Oisin and his family deserve the time to work through it. So he's obviously confirming, you know, that there is something to be thinking and working through here, which nobody really thought. We thought that this was a done deal. He was going out there. You know, it's a big decision for him. Like, he's only a very young fella. He's lost 2 All-Irelands already. It's hard to know. Like, I mean, you know, he goes out for his 2 years now. Probably Oisin Mullen's 20 or 21 now. He goes out for his 2 years, maybe gets signed up. He could be 24, 25 before he comes back, and an awful lot will have changed.
Yeah, it's a huge decision to make. And, you know, that lure of being paid for being a professional sportsman is obviously a huge pull. The fact that Australia is it's miles and miles away, and it's a couple of days travel and getting your body right, and, you know, it's that isolation from family and friends and support structures, you know, that's something which tends to have a huge bearing on some of these players when they do return home. When you get chatting to them, that just loss of connection to their roots is something which they struggle with. So, yeah, but in the case of Oisín Mullen, look, at if I was James Horn, I'd be doing absolutely everything I could to be holding on to him. You know, they're close, Mayo, as we know, over the last 10 years, and with a new captain going in, Stephen Cohen, which I think is a great choice for them. That's another story for another day, but you'd be doing your very best as the management and the county board to keep all your best players close to home, whether helping them in finding education out west or finding work out west, just to be able to give them the opportunity to earn a living that's amenable to becoming an elite inter-county footballer. And losing someone like Oisín Mullen, it would be a big hole to fill, you know. So it's an interesting one, yeah. It's a tough decision for Oisín to make, but it seems like he's going to be in Ireland by the sounds of it.
Yeah. Do the comeback better players, Aaron? The majority of them come back after the 2 years, maybe three. Like, I mean, you know, very, very few have stayed out there. Kennelly and Zach, you know, like, I mean, are the two ones that have stayed out there, you know, for their whole careers. But most of them are coming back. Kennelly obviously came back for a year. Like, here's the thing, because a lot of them often go out at 17, 18. And you think because they go out there, they're coming back as unbelievable players. But it's not always the best players on the team that are picked. It's often the fastest, the biggest, you know, the best catcher. You know, it's not always the best Gaelic footballers as such. But when they come back, you're always expecting, oh, lovely, he's back. Can't wait to see him playing. And he might have been, you know, one of the good players on the team, but he was a speed demon, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, like we've had Kevin Dias, who went over mid-2000s. He had just broken on the Armagh senior team. And then we had Ross McQuillan, who just come back last year. He had only spent a year over there. Like Ross is finding his feet again at county level and starting to show his true form at club. But you say they're really only finding their way. Like Ross is only finding his way at club level, at club senior level. And then he was gone, you know, and people are thinking, because he's in Australia, he's going to come back and he's going to run an Armagh senior inter-county team. Whenever he's had no real exposure to that level, yes, he has everything that it takes to be a top inter-county player, but it takes time. But I think the public perception is it's just going to happen straight away. This guy's going to be flying. Kevin Dias was different, and he was the same as Tommy Walsh, where he had tore his hamstring off the bone, rehabbed it over there and struggled. And come back, and like I never seen anybody as meticulous in the preparation whenever he came home. But it took him about 2 years, maybe more, to get a handle on the hamstring injury and get a proper run of things. And then even after that, he really only had about one and a half years where he showcased his full potential, particularly 2014. But then his body started breaking down in other places, started picking up knee injuries, ankle injuries. And ultimately, you know, his career with Armagh was cut short off the back of it. So not like there's very few people who come back and actually fulfill their potential. Injury seems to be one. But I think the psychological aspect of it seems to be the biggest one. And it's a bit like you see the young fella who's 16, 17, goes across the water to play soccer, doesn't make it. I think mentally, I'm only just surmising that mentally, they feel like maybe they failed a wee bit or they didn't cut it, and their confidence takes a bit of a dent. And then you say the game moves on, you're trying to adapt from being an underage player to a senior player. So there's a whole lot to factor in. But I think generally as a public, we think they're going to automatically fit in. They're going to be unbelievable. It's great for us. Where I think you could be looking at maybe 24 months before they are settled back in and they really find their feet and their confidence and their exposure to that level sort of starts to level out.
Yeah, I've thought about this because, like, I mean, you know, people throw this out there and I've done it myself. Oh, look, sure, he's only going, you know, when you're defending it, and I still wouldn't be critical of it. Like, I mean, they should be allowed to go and try it if they want, no problem with me. But the kind of perception is, sure, look, sure, what harm is it? They go out for 2 years and sure, they'll be exposed to a professional environment. They'll come back a much better player. And like, that's nonsense when you think about it, because like, you're right. You're coming back after, most of them coming back after not making it, which is a huge thing. They're landing back. And they're in the middle of nowhere college-wise, work-wise. There are no qualifications. And then they're coming back with pressure on it. Oh, he's back. He's going to lift us out of the doldrums. You know, like, I mean, it's no surprise these fellas are coming back and they're not necessarily hitting the ground. Conor McKenna hit the ground running. And then last year didn't have as good a good year as well. So it's a difficult one. There's no doubt about that. It's a difficult one to kind of maybe analyze. But it's not as simple as, oh, they're going out to be exposed to a professional environment, and now we'll have them back when they come back, and they'll be, you know, they'll have gone from 17 to 21, and they'll be a man, and, you know, they'll have missed all that under 21 development as you, and like you say, Aaron, playing a bit of club senior, you know, then getting into the county, and those natural progressions, they're just ripped up for them, you know, and they actually go across those 3-4 years playing a completely different game.
Yeah, like,
so it does completely mess with their development.
I had always sort of went along your train of thought there, like worst case scenario, Ross McQuillan, he's going to come back in 2 years, he's going to have a couple of stone on him, you know, a much better athlete. But whenever you actually think about it, there's a guy, Jamie O'Reilly from Loch Aylan and Down, and I just read an article with him last week where he talked about his experience. He won an Ulster under 21 with Down, about 08-09, and went over and played for Richmond, and actually broke into the team really early and was making it over there, and then just returned home in that year, but literally played absolutely little or no football, even for his club, whenever he came home in that lone county, because he said he couldn't adapt then. He was back to college, and the weather was bad. He had a bad day at college. He's having to drive down to Newry to do a fitness test from Belfast, and he was starting to wonder what's all this about, because he was used to a professional lifestyle, and then you're coming back to being an amateur, to trying to work different pressures, different scenarios, whether it's college, work or whatever, and it's a totally different environment. You're not professional, and you're never going to be that again. So you're really coming back into the real world. And I think, again, that's just another aspect that the players seem to find hard. And Connor Glass sort of mentioned something similar on your show previously, you know, where it took him time to settle back into a house with his parents, where he'd been living in Australia with his own or a few mates, and then trying to adapt back into the game, trying to get back into college. There's so many different aspects that it's just not as plain sailing as what we all think sitting back looking at it.
Yeah, no, exactly. And a lot of the players have the big question of leaving their counties, which is a big one. But Conor Nash, who's playing with Hawthorne, he had, not only had he got the decision to play Meath senior because he was a brilliant player, he turned down a Leinster Academy contract to go play with Hawthorne. So, and not only that, is he was thinking of studying medicine when he was in secondary school. So like, I mean, Conor Nash is out with Hawthorne and he's still with them. And he is the guest. We're doing a new show here on Smaller Fish called Irish Down Under, where we'll track all the Irish boys and the ladies down there as well, over the course of the year, and maybe stay up to date a little bit. We'll do a news round or some sort of catch up with Zach Toohey is the next one next week. And Conor Nash is our interviewee. So look forward to that one. So that's it for today, lads. Thanks very much to everybody for listening. And as usual, thanks very much for continuing to support the show. Thanks to our sponsor, Benetti Menswear, who's an Irish brand, who are one of Ireland's leading menswear suppliers. That's it for today. Good luck, everyone.
Yeah, I've spoken to the players and we've had a full and frank discussion, and we all agree that the Smaller Fish guys are not just accredited clubs and their counties, but to homo sapiens all over the world.
Well, I want nothing to do with that podcast. Absolutely not. The Smaller Fish, not for me. No way.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.